Welcome to the Closing Mark Report. It's February the 15th, 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana. And later in this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard. He's the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. In agricultural news, it appears the chair of the Federal Reserve Board wants to meet with high-ranking agribusiness professionals next week. Tom Harkins says the $6 billion baseline overage farm bill deal Colin Peterson cut with the White House is not enough. And if the three parties, the Senate, the House, and the White House, cannot come to an agreement on farm policy, it'll revert to the 1938/1949 Act. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories shortly. And then I'll remind you of some work U of I agronomist Fred Below is doing with tropical maize. It just may be the next best hope for an easy-to-use biofuels crop from the Midwest. It all happens on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL AM 580, public radio from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson's team of experts and strategic consulting approach utilize the latest technology. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
Taking a look at the numbers in Chicago and Minneapolis this afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby March wheat at $10.27.5, down 4.5 cents in Chicago. July futures at $9.37.5 were down 3.5 in Chicago on this afternoon. From Minneapolis at the grain exchange, futures finished the nearby contract just a little bit higher. They didn't finish up the limit for the day. They finished 82 cents higher at $19.35. At the Chicago Board of Trade, corn futures finished like this. The nearby March at 5.14¾, up 3¾ on the afternoon. May at 5.27, up 4¼, and July up a nickel at 5.38¼. September 5.38, up 4¾ on the day. March soybean futures 13.73¾, up 5¾. The May at 13.80¹, up 5¾. And July beans at 14.02½, up 7¾. November up 12 cents at $13.17½ for the day. Bean meal finished the March at 258.80, down 60. The May at 265 unchanged. March oil at 58.57, up 41. And May at 59.19, that finished up 33 on the afternoon. Live cattle futures now from the Chicago Mercantile Exchange finished the day like this. The February contract at 91.40, down 125. April futures at 93.97½, down 10 cents even. The nearby February, by the way, was down 12.5, not down 125. March feeder cattle, 20 higher at 104.62½. April futures at 108 and 5 cents, down 12.5 cents. April lean hogs at 64.20, down a dime, and the May futures at 73 even were down 42.5 cents on the afternoon. Outside markets look like this for the day. March crude oil futures at 95.50, 4 cents higher. The April futures at 95.50, down a nickel. The CRB index now trading at 384.31, that's down 0.08. The dollar at 76.072 is down 0.067, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 12,304. It's just about 72 points lower on the afternoon. Here's what the forecast for the two-state region looks like from our own Mike Sola. He says in northern and western Illinois, it'll be mostly sunny this afternoon yet. In the remainder of Illinois, it'll become partly sunny. In Indiana, partly to mostly cloudy. Highs will range this afternoon from 10 in far northwestern Illinois to 40 in southeastern Indiana. Tonight, skies will be clear to partly cloudy and colder. Lows will range from 2 below 0 in northwestern Illinois to 24 in the far south. Saturday in northern and central sections will be mostly sunny. In the south, partly sunny early, then becoming cloudy with showers arriving in southwestern Illinois during the afternoon. Highs will range from 25 in the northern parts of Indiana to around 45 in the southwestern part of Illinois. You're listening to WILL. Visit our website. The address is willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
Time now to take a look at the futures market, and joining us this afternoon is Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Boy, let's talk about what a big week it was in Chicago and in the Minneapolis Grain Exchange. We finally settled out and ended up not the limit up in Minneapolis, but we did make new contract highs in Chicago in the bean pit.
Yeah, absolutely amazing. And I dare I say today was kind of a calm day of the last five. I mean, my goodness, I thought today might be the most exciting of all, but certainly it seemed as though the three-day holiday weekend was probably starting to enter into the minds of some of the traders. And although the volatility was pretty wide and the trading ranges on the day were pretty wide, we had a pretty calm close when it was all said and done. And when I talked to the floor after the close, probably the most noteworthy thing up there was the technicals were working very hard in the corn market. March corn, if you take a look at the daily chart, it closed the highest we've seen on that contract. In other words, it closed it around and settled at 514 and three quarters. We've certainly been higher than that in March corn, but we've never been able to settle that high on a daily close. So that's one of the things they noted. They also noted what you talked about on the spring wheat complex. Minneapolis seemed to be pulling everything back up as we closed out the day, especially when you see, you know, 1930 and 1980 as prices for lead month spring wheat.
Do you know what trade will look like on Sunday or on, Monday evening when it finally resumes? Because we do have a long weekend and no markets on Monday and no markets here, of course, on the radio station on Monday either. We'll run Commodity Week instead during the closing market report, so you have an opportunity to hear it twice if you want to on the radio. But do we know what the trading range in Minneapolis will be on the overnight session Monday night into Tuesday morning now?
I would think that
back to 60?
Yeah, I think that's right. If you don't, since you didn't have the limit up move of $1.35, I think was the limit today set with that limit up move yesterday that expanded at another 50% to $1.35, because you didn't see that. I don't think they're waiting 2 days. I think they're going to go back to the previous limit of 90 or maybe even 60 cents. I don't know for sure exactly what it's going to be, but you know, if the outside markets don't, you know, like the stock market and the crude oil and the afternoon trade here, don't get too nasty, I would suspect the trade's going to look at the, you know, baseline numbers again over the weekend in preparation for the Outlook conference coming up on Thursday, Friday, where especially Friday morning, if memory serves me right, the second day of the conference, they do release new updated acreage numbers, and that's probably what the trade's mostly gearing up for Monday night and then Tuesday morning when we come back in the day.
You know, there's an awful lot of talk about how acreage will be dispersed. Some of the numbers, I think, that were released by USDA this week. If you look at the numbers over time, really, they see corn acreage settling out at about 90, 91 million acres over the next decade, a little lower in the coming year, but then dropping back up 2 to 3 and just staying there over the following decade. What'd you make of those numbers?
Well, the baseline numbers, they probably don't have a lot factored in as far as they certainly did not factor in the new Energy Security Act of 2007 that has passed Congress. They certainly had to go with the 2002 Farm Bill because we clearly don't have anything done there. But the USDA said on their main page their assumption is no recession, and their assumption is that Bush does not knock back the ethanol subsidy and the ethanol tariff stays in place. So I think those baseline numbers were pretty useful for wheat and for dollar expectations and maybe inflationary expectations on the macro level, but getting to the micro level, it's kind of like last year. I remember last year I was up there in D.C. and everybody was talking about corn and beans, and sure enough, that second day of that conference, things changed dramatically from what they just released on their baseline projections the prior week. Well, this year we've got all five spring crops. You know, you've got the spring wheat, the corn, the beans, the cotton, and even the oats are going to play a major role in robbing each other from acres. And I suspect this year more than ever there's going to be a winner or a couple winners, and there's going to be a couple losers. Right now, from what we can pick up in the northern plains from our clients in the Dakotas, is even more spring wheat's going to be put on corn stubble. So we're probably going to move our planted acreage number back from 88 in corn down to 86 here on our weekend commentary to our clients. And we'll probably keep our beans within a half million of what we've been running. We've been running about 70 and a half, Todd. We'll probably move that up to around 71 and then put the rest of the acres around, 248, 249 million total acres, probably, push that into cotton and into additional soybean and additional spring wheat acres.
Well, I suppose that tells me that 540 is quickly to be gone if you're pushing the corn acres down that far, in your mind, but you can correct me, and that the next trip up is somewhere around 580 or $6.
I think that's really what we're looking at, is if you've got those trend lines underneath you, they're rock solid, and unless the wheat really decides to take a sharp move lower, which is possible with this change in the forecast and the southern plains starting to get the look of drought-breaking type weather patterns, if you start to see that more, then maybe that will hamper the corn from going higher. But you take out that old high in the March corn that we just put in here of that 528 and three quarters level in March, that February 6th high, you really don't have anything standing in your way from completing a swing objective in March up to 560. That would probably relate to that 545, 560 level in the December futures as well.
What are you telling producers that they ought to do at this point, then? Are they just going to hang out and wait and see what their crop insurance looks like and then make some decisions, or you have other things in mind?
No, we're going to go ahead with the corn puts as the wheat moves higher. We're certainly moving. Step one is to get most of our wheat hedged here the next few days, and we've stepped up that here this morning, and we're going to do that more next week. But as the market moves higher, we'll go ahead and push some more 08 corn and 08 beans out as well. I think the key is what we have left in 07. We're not going to be real nervous about dumping unless those trend lines get violated.
Okay, anything to add before I let you go for the day?
Well, I think probably the other thing that the market has not shaken out yet is whether we're going to go into a recession or not, and whether the emerging markets are going to slow down. And there's a lot more economic data that came out today, both United States and Chinese economic data. And first glance is that we are slowing down globally. And I think maybe the funds might have to look at that here along with the agricultural outlook meeting and make some determinations on their money flows next week or the week after.
Any comment on Bernanke thinking about meeting with some of the agribusiness and political professionals next week?
Yeah, I think it's probably a real good idea because the private sector is not acknowledging that there's a recession coming, and most of the data that you would look at that historically stands up would say we've got one foot in the pond in recession right now.
Okay, thanks much. I appreciate you being with us.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Mike Zuzulo. He's with Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report. Happens each and every Friday afternoon.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Well, just after the bottom of the hour, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. Steve Hilberg, the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, will join us at that time. Now it's time to take a look at the agricultural newscast. Your director of ag programming at the WILL stations, Dave Dickey, is here.
In agricultural news, there are indications that Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke plans to meet informally with agribusiness officials and agricultural economists next week at USDA's annual Outlook Conference. The run-up in crop and food prices is attracting the attention of the Federal Reserve. USDA is projecting a 3-4% increase in the Consumer Price Index for food, based in part on high wheat prices, which are squeezing the profit margins of the baking industry. Senate Agriculture Committee Chairman Tom Harkin says $6 billion over baseline is simply not enough to pay for the farm bill. House Agriculture Chairman Colin Peterson made the offer earlier this week. It immediately drew the support of the Bush administration as a good starting point for a framework farm bill agreement. Harkin says, in his words, "I'm still optimistic that working together we'll come up with a reasonable amount of money above the $6 billion that we can sign on to." Stuart Doan has more.
Iowa's Tom Harkin briefed reporters prior to the meeting, and while he wouldn't say how many billions of dollars above the CBO budget baseline he'd ask for,
it's got to be more than $6 billion. just got to be.
A farm bill costing $6 billion above the baseline was the deal House Ag Chairman Colin Peterson cut with the White House. According to Harkin, the administration at some point will have to decide
whether they want to veto the farm bill or do they want to make reasonable negotiations and accommodations to sign one.
Harkin said if the Senate cannot reach a funding agreement with the White House by the beginning of March,
we're left with either reverting to the 49 Act, which I think is problematic, or we extend the present farm bill, and we extend it for 1 or 2 years. So that's sort of what we're looking at. Stay tuned.
I'm Stuart Doan reporting.
Farm groups sent a letter to Congress yesterday saying the new proposal makes excessive cuts. The group wants at least $12.5 billion more for the farm bill, not the $6 billion offered by the Peterson plan. Congress is on recess next week. Farmland prices in the western Midwest rose at a record pace in the fourth quarter of 2007. The Federal Reserve Bank of Kansas City says western irrigated land values are 18% higher than the fourth quarter of 2006. Non-irrigated cropland values rose by 21%. The bank did not release specific dollar figures. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is the Director of Agricultural Programming at the WILL radio stations, public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website. The address is willag.org. By just about 6 o'clock on Friday evenings, we always post Commodity Week to the website. It's willag.org. You can visit the site right now. It's easy to use. willag.org. Well, up next, when University of Illinois crop scientist Fred Belo began growing tropical maize, that's the form of the crop that grows in the tropics, he was looking for some novel genes for the utilization of nitrogen and fertilizer and was hoping to discover information that could be useful to American corn producers. Now, however, it appears that maize itself may prove to be the ultimate U.S. biofuels crop. Early results show that tropical maize, when grown in the Midwest, requires few crop inputs, like nitrogen fertilizer, chiefly because it does not produce many ears. It also is easier for farmers to integrate into their current operations than some other dedicated energy crops because it can be easily rotated with corn or soybeans and can be planted, cultivated, and harvested mostly with the same equipment U.S. farmers already have. And finally, tropical maize stalks are believed to require less processing than corn grain. Corn stover, switchgrass, miscanthus, gigantus, and scores of other plants now being studied for biofuel production. What it does produce straight from the field with no processing, says University of Illinois research scientist Fred Belo, is 25% or more sugar in the forms of sucrose, fructose, and glucose.
One advantage of maize as a biofuel crop as opposed to miscanthus or switchgrass is that it stores sucrose in its stalk. The way the maize plant normally works is I make sucrose in the leaf today, I put it in the stalk sometime that night, and then I move it into the grain the next day. Now, if you don't have grain, then the stalk becomes the alternate reservoir for the storage of that sucrose.
The long dog days of the Midwestern summer postpones the development of ears on the tropical maize. The sugars, destined for the ear that won't have time to develop, are stored and harvested instead in the stalk. And Fred Belo believes those tropical maize plants without ears and concentrated amounts of easily processed sugars could have a dramatic effect on Midwestern production of ethanol and other biofuels.
Well, an advantage of sucrose or readily available sugars is they require way less processing. They can be used directly, both to make ethanol and potentially for other industrial purposes, even more valuable than ethanol. The molasses or other sugar products could fairly readily be extracted from the stalks of corn as well as sugar cane or sweet sorghum.
In this case, the corn is tropical maize. Fred Belo says Midwestern-grown tropical maize easily grows 14 or 15 feet tall, or about twice as tall as regular U.S. corn. That tall stalk, minus the ear, is the key to the available sugars. And the best news of all, should this variant of corn prove economically viable as an ethanol feedstock, is that it's just a row crop.
The tropical maize would, if I showed you the seed, You would grow it in a way that would be exactly like current maize. You would use the same planting equipment, the same herbicides, the same pest control. You'd grow it all in exactly the same way. It would look early on. You could not tell it was any different. The only reason you'd notice it is it would be awful tall and have very few ears.
The U of I's Fred Belo says in terms of biofuel production, tropical maize could be considered the sugar cane of the Midwest. Early trials show tropical maize requires much less nitrogen fertilizer than conventional corn, and that the stalks actually accumulate more sugar when less nitrogen is available. Nitrogen fertilizer is one of the major costs of growing corn. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
It's a Friday afternoon. Time to take a look at the cash grain market. Bruce Bostard of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois, joins us this afternoon. Good afternoon to you, Bruce.
Good afternoon.
Tell me about basis in the East Central Illinois area.
We've seen a little bit of improvement out here. Processor numbers have been quiet, steady, old and new crop corn. Beans have been a little more volatile in the processor market. Went from a 30 under last week down to a 40 under and came back to 35. Cash bean movement, despite some board rallies, has been relatively slow. Our basis numbers on the rail, we've improved about 2 cents over the last week on corn nearby, a penny on soybeans. SIF numbers, relatively volatile. We've seen some quick shipment nearby first half February type stuff that's improved and been strong down at the Gulf for soybeans. The problem is there just aren't a whole lot of train sets available for wheels to get them down there. So February trains are pretty much booked up.
Have you been watching what's been happening in the cash wheat market with interest?
It's interesting on that. Scary from the standpoint of watching it and thinking what could happen in the soybeans with a tight carryout if we went into weather problems this summer.
And this would not be something you haven't faced in the last couple of years. We were down to, 115, I think, a couple of years ago. We're at 160 at the carryout at the moment.
Yep. Well, for a carryout to use ratio, we're not nearly as tight. And bean crop has a new crop coming off every 6 months. We have that in its factor. But it seems like with the what-if scenarios and the volatility in the market, necessarily 100 carryover is not what 100 carryover was 3 or 4 years ago.
What do you have farmers doing at this point? Are they willing to sit back and watch the market climb higher?
I think right now they're sitting back. We still buy some bushels, but the size of the scale-up purchase is a lot smaller. On dips, guys aren't too worried about it. They're sold well enough into it that it's not a problem. They're good disciplined scale-up sellers, but enough has moved. We've bought an awful lot of new crop grain that it's just small lot sales.
And your bids for the day?
We are at $4.95 on nearby corn and $13.24 on the soybeans.
We appreciate you being with us.
Thank you.
Thanks much. That is Bruce Bostard. He is with the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. In just 2 minutes, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast with the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. His name is Steve Hilberg.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Authorities are describing the gunman who killed 5 students at Northern Illinois University yesterday as both an outstanding student and a disturbed individual. Police say Stephen Kazmierczak carried a shotgun hidden in a guitar case and 3 handguns onto the campus. The 27-year-old had enrolled as a graduate social work student at the University of Illinois last year. They say he bought the weapons legally in Champaign and had a valid firearm owner's identification card. Campus police at NIU say Kazmierczak had stopped taking medication and become somewhat erratic in the last couple of weeks, but they declined to provide any details. On the University of Illinois campus in Urbana, their students are shocked to hear that the shooter was one of their own. Many students we interviewed on the U of I quad this afternoon are now thinking about security on the UIUC campus.
Basically fear is what I'm thinking.
Because, you know, it's just a random guy coming in some random lecture hall. You know, you think that could be you. Kind of makes you question safety.
I'm sort of worried what the administration might do to try to keep us safe. You know, I don't want them to completely lock us down.
I think this university probably is too big for it to actually actively prevent anything like that from happening.
I was so afraid to go into my lecture day just because it can happen anywhere. It's not just isolated incidents. It's obviously something with our generation that's screwed up.
We talked to U of I students David Rodriguez, Josh Pashadag, Casey Lamb, Ken Walker, and Aaron Dittmar. Kazmierczyk's advisor on the UIUC campus in the Graduate School of Social Work called him a very personable individual. Indiana University President Michael McRobbie is expected to announce a new school investigation into allegations against men's basketball coach Kelvin Sampson. Sampson is accused of 5 major NCAA infractions involving telephone calls to recruits and then giving false or misleading information to NCAA investigators at IU. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. We're joined now by Steve Hilberg, the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center here in Champaign County, to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast and, more importantly, the weather systems that will be making their way across the Midwest over the next couple of days. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Todd.
Tell me about what's happening and where it's coming from.
Well, we have a low now developing over the southwestern U.S., which will begin moving out this weekend and head toward take a target on the Midwest. Looks like the low is going to move. The path being forecast right now is roughly from Springfield, Missouri, to St. Louis, to Chicago. And generally, we'll find areas south of that path having mostly liquid precipitation and areas to the north frozen precipitation. So it looks like another heavy rain or precip event for the Midwest, which is really not what we need right now. We could use some drying time. Appears the heaviest precipitation will be from northern Missouri and southern Iowa through northern Illinois and northern Indiana, southern Michigan. And a lot of that's going to be snow. But in general, it's going to be a mess this weekend, especially if you're heading north from central Illinois. So we got another big event coming in, and that'll be followed by some cold weather.
And it looks to me like Milwaukee's going to be getting a whole lot more snow that they probably don't really want.
No, and in fact, they're rapidly approaching. They're in their top 10 snowiest winters. Madison, Wisconsin, has now had their all-time snowiest winter on record. They just broke the record that was set back in 78-79, which, if you were around, could remember that. So it's been a very active and snowy winter in northern Illinois, southern Wisconsin. Here we're still running a little bit below normal on snowfall, but we've had certainly plenty of precipitation.
And what do you see for next week?
Well, once that system goes through, it will be in for a period of colder weather for a couple of days, and probably some light snow, maybe even into Tuesday behind the system. But then things probably will slowly warm up during next week as the next system approaches, and we could be dealing with more precipitation by next weekend.
As you look at anything else around the Midwest that we need to be concerned about?
Well, I think folks might want to be concerned about is the potential for flooding. We have a lot of snow still on the ground in northern Illinois. If we get any kind of rain on top of that or melting over the weekend ahead of this system, we could start seeing, and even here in central Illinois with all the rain, we could start seeing some rivers begin to rise again. So flooding is probably the biggest concern right now in much of the Midwest.
We appreciate you being with us.
Okay, Todd.
That's Steve Hilberg. He's the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report. Happens each and every Friday afternoon. Don't forget to visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find most of our daily ag programming, and you can download it as an MP3 file in our new improved website. It's really simple to use, and don't forget to sign up for our weekend newsletter. It's over on the right-hand side of the page. Just hit subscribe. It's just as easy to unsubscribe. So if you don't like it, and that's highly unlikely, but if you don't like it, you can unsubscribe too. It's all at willag.org. Our guest this week on Commodity Week, which airs tomorrow at 11:30 a.m. on WILL, is Roy Huckabee. He's with the Lynn Group. Have a good afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.